fighting for America.
You put a Democrat in the office of governor of Idaho, and things will change within 90 days.
Well, yeah, we'll all be worse off, Steve.
Hold on.
Fighting for Idaho.
By the way,
what part of socialism is not Otter part of?
You know, this is such an optimistic. This is such an optimistic.
Healthcare.
Tom!
He gave his
Tom!
Fighting for you.
Gun-toting Pat, what do you have to say here? Hopefully it's more. Here, hold on. You have to speak into the microphone.
I said if BS was concrete, you'd be a superhighway.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. We're joined by Robert Spencer, best-selling author, Jihadi Watch, Front Page Magazine. Mr. Spencer, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great to have you with us here at 580 KIDO. So let's get to it. What the heck's going on in the Middle East from your perspective?
Well, the Middle East is obviously on fire, and the caliphate has been restored, which is momentous world historical news. The Islamic State, of course, claims to be the restoration of the ancient government that Muslims for 1,400 years believed was the only legitimate government under which Muslims should be governed. And it was abolished in 1924 by the secular Turkish government, and that has been the aspiration of jihad groups around the world to restore it. Now this group claims to have restored it, and the claim is so attractive that well over 1,000 Muslims from Western countries have actually traveled to Syria and Iraq to join up with them because they think that this is the thing that they ought to be doing. We never saw this with Al-Qaeda or other jihad groups, so many Muslims from the West going to join.
Have we lost the Middle East?
Oh, well, you know, I think that it's going to get worse before it gets better. It's an unfortunate fact that people like Hosni Mubarak and Saddam Hussein and Bashar Assad, as noxious as they all were and are, they kept the peace, they kept a certain sense of stability, and they kept the lid on what the kinds of things that we're seeing now.
Well, wasn't it common sense to just keep those guys in power, especially Mubarak?
Oh, yeah. Mubarak was really, you know, he called, when the uprisings were getting very bad, he asked help from the United States several times and was, of course, rebuffed because the Obama administration actively wanted to see the Muslim Brotherhood regime come to power, the Morsi regime that only lasted a year.
Well, is this the worst foreign policy that we've ever seen in an administration?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The effect of the Obama administration's policies has been to empower America's enemies all over the world and embolden the Islamic jihadis who have vowed to destroy the United States and the West to a tremendous degree.
Now, your latest book, Arab Winter Comes to America, The Truth About the War We're In, let's start with that. Are we fighting an enemy that we just don't know anything about? I mean,
yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know.
The idea of the book is that we have denial and willful ignorance at the top, and it is endangering us all. You know, it's epitomized by the response of Obama to the Islamic State, this group that calls itself Islamic in its name, that does everything that it does based on the Quran and Islamic teaching, and the first thing he says about them is that they're not Islamic. This is just wishful thinking and willful ignorance. And the book shows that the denial is so pervasive that it kept the Fort Hood jihad massacre and the Boston Marathon jihad bombing and other jihad terror attacks from being prevented when they could have, should have, and would have been prevented were it not for all this politically correct denial.
Why do we give these folks a pass, whether it's Major Nadal Hassan, whether it's the beheading guy where we had somebody on MSNBC say it was a case of workplace violence? Why the pass for these radicals?
It seems as if the Obama administration is bound as a matter of policy to denying that there really is a jihad against the West. This would raise uncomfortable questions about their immigration policies, about the friendly attitude and posture that they have toward groups like the Council on American Islamic Relations and the Islamic Society of North America, which have ties to Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. And to deflect that kind of scrutiny, he classifies a great deal of Islamic jihad activity as having nothing to do with jihad and Islam, and it's become almost a knee-jerk reaction now. Every time there's a jihad attack, there's a slew of government officials and politicians who get on TV and say it has nothing to do with Islam, instead of asking the tough questions of the mosques about what they're teaching and stepping up law enforcement scrutiny of these institutions, which they don't want to do.
Well, again, it gets kind of beyond the realm of explanation when, Mr. Spencer, we talk about someone beheading someone who on their Facebook had Osama bin Laden and such, and we say, well, he was just a misunderstood guy at work.
Yeah, it's just ludicrous. It's amazing. I was able to examine Jakeem Yisrael, the Oklahoma beheader's Facebook page, at great detail before it was taken down. And he had, as you say, pictures of Osama, pictures of the Taliban, a picture of himself holding up the one index finger, which is the sign of allegiance to the Islamic State, a picture of a graphic photo of a beheading that had underneath it a Quran verse calling for beheading. And so this guy was obviously very deeply enamored of Islamic jihad activity, and then he imitated it in his own life. And so it's just absolutely beyond absurd for the Obama administration to claim that there is no Islamic connection to this.
Well, and again, we go back to, we're fighting an enemy that has no fear of the United States of America. And Al-Qaeda said that, and the Taliban said that, but they knew we could bring harm to them. Mr. Spencer, have we ever seen anything like these beheadings? And what's the motivation behind this social media promotion of these beheadings? What is their point of view in doing these horrible crimes?
Well, I know it's repulsive to Americans. It's horrifying to Americans, but that's actually part of the point, that they are trying to, in the words of the Quran, strike terror into the hearts of the enemies of Allah, which is something that's commanded of Muslims to do. And so that's one thing. The very fact that we find this so repugnant is one of the reasons why they do it. And second, because it's a recruiting tool, because then young jihadis and would-be jihadis who see that they really are carrying out the Quran's commands to strike terror into the hearts of the enemies of Allah say, this is the group for me. I'm going to join up with them.
Now, when you've given lectures to the FBI and to the Army and the General Staff, what has been their reaction to what you're saying about these folks and what makes them so dangerous?
When I have spoken to FBI groups, military groups, and so on, they were very receptive to this, and they were very relieved that they were finally getting the full truth that made sense of what they see in the world and what's going on. The Obama administration put a stop to all that in 2011 when they forbade any mention of Islam and jihad in connection with terrorism in counter-terror training. And since then, willful ignorance has ruled the day, and FBI agents are abjectly ill-equipped to understand and evaluate the intelligence that they receive.
Most of us, whether we've had flashbacks of Kingdom of Heaven or studied the Crusades in high school or maybe college, you know, they're a distant memory, but does this go back to the Crusades with these people?
Yeah, it goes back actually further. There were 450 years of jihad activity that conquered and Islamized what up until then had been half of the Christian world. And that was well before there was any crusade. And they believed that those people way back in the medieval times believed that they were acting upon imperatives of Muhammad and the Quran. And so does the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda today. It's all the same impulse that comes from the same religious teaching.
Well, if you were putting money on this, one side seems to be passionate. That would be them. We don't seem to have that same enthusiasm.
Yes, that's the problem. Because, you know, we see it again and again in history. If you look at an example that has nothing to do with Islam whatsoever, the Bolsheviks were never a majority in Russia, never close to a majority, but they had the passion, they had the will, they had the focus, they had the drive, and their opposition was divided, confused, and did not have the will to fight. And so the Soviet Union was created and was able to stay there for 70 years. I think we're seeing something very much like that happening now.
Okay, what about our friends, the Iranians, home of former crazy Mahmoud, their former leader?
Well, the Iranians, you know, they're Shiites, and that means that they hate the Sunni caliphate, and they don't want to see the Islamic State there. And so I think that things could change significantly if the Islamic State takes Baghdad or even seriously threatens to do so. I know they're very close, but they haven't mounted any all-out attack on it. at this point. And I think that's because they know that if they do, they could draw the Iranians in, and that might be the end of their story.
Aren't they going to draw us in if they capture Baghdad?
They could well, and then it would be under the very strange circumstance of fighting, not only fighting alongside the Iranians who are chanting death to America in Tehran in their military parades, but also fighting against the people that we gave weapons to and empowered in Syria to fight against Assad, who's Iran's ally. The situation is extraordinarily confused, and Obama's response to it has been so incoherent that we are on both sides of this issue at the same time.
Are you surprised by this, considering you know so much about this region and everything else, that we have an administration that was going to do the outreach to the Muslim world has been so wrong?
Oh, no, I'm not in the least surprised that he's been completely wrong. I knew he would be completely wrong from the start. His premises are wrong. I mean, even when he denies that these groups have anything to do with Islam, it shows that this man is more interested in fantasy than in reality, and he's basing policy on fantasy, and that never has good results.
So we've covered Iran. What did we do wrong in Iraq? I mean, billions of dollars, blood and treasure, and now the whole thing is blowing up.
Well, there were so many things that we did wrong in Iraq. In the first place, George W. Bush thought that the Iraqis would welcome us as liberators. They did not. There was never any understanding of why that was so. That was so because the Iraqis believed in general, with whichever camp they were in, that Islamic law ought to rule the country, not a law based on democracy. They did not have any democratic tradition, did not value democracy, didn't believe in it. And as it happened, when we did the put in one man, one vote system, we got the exactly predictable results, that the group with the largest population would win the power, and that's what happened. The Shiites had 55% of Iraq, and so they won 55% of the vote. Everybody voted strictly along sectarian and tribal lines. And so the weak Shiite regime came in, and the Sunnis never supported it. The Shiite regime never gave any significant power to the Sunnis. And then the Sunni jihadis banded together to create the Islamic State, and we have the situation we're in now. The whole thing was ill-conceived from the start. If Saddam Hussein were still there, or Saddam Hussein's dictatorial successor, they would be terrible dictators, but this kind of thing would not be going on.
Right. It goes back to Saddam was a bad man, but he was our bad man.
Yeah. And, you know, he was a bulwark against Iran. The Iran-Iraq war went on for 10 years. In the 1980s, and all that time, neither Iran nor Iraq were plotting any mischief against the United States. This is an uncomfortable fact, but it's a fact. Iran has designs over the whole region. The Sunnis will never stand for any Iranian hegemony over significant Sunni territory, and that means there's going to be civil war and ever-widening conflict. And all of this could have been avoided had we left the status quo ante.
Mr. Spencer, please stand by. More coming up next. If you have a question, 580-5436. 580-KIDO. It is 818. Time for traffic. Good morning.
Just another manic Monday.
Brian Wiley, weekdays at 6. Now back to Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Our guest once again is Robert Spencer joining us. You can catch him in a lot of places. Mr. Spencer, people want to get a hold of you. What can they do?
Jihadwatch.org is online, jihadwatch.org, and that's my website. It is a news and commentary site tracking jihad activity in the U.S. and around the world, updated many times daily.
How worried are you about your safety in tracking these radicals?
Oh, I get plenty of death threats, but it's not as if I'm going to live forever if I don't do this, and it has to be done. So there you are.
Wow. Really? Specific death threats?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Plenty of them. The thing is, though, the guys that give you death threats, they're not going to kill you. They just are getting their satisfaction from issuing the threat. The only problem is that they're doing that suggests that there may be other people who are not going to tell you, but they might be tracking you. And, you know, you never know, but I haven't had any incidents. I do speak, when I speak out in public, I have a bodyguard and take precautions, but it is what it is. There's nothing that ultimately can be done. I think that the Declaration of Independence, you know, those guys ended up by pledging their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to that great cause. And that if we don't have people who are willing to do that now to defend it, to the cause of defending freedom, then we're done for.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the more some of the other countries in the Middle East. What about Afghanistan? What's going on there?
Well, Afghanistan just elected a new president, and they are, according to Barack Obama, a stable, functioning democracy. But, of course, the Taliban is still there, and the Taliban is probably going to topple that government as soon as the last troops are gone, the last American troops. Obama has pledged to get them out by the end of next year, and this is like giving an announcement to the enemy that all they have to do is wait out the period between now and then they can step up operations. It's the most tactically stupid thing you could possibly do, but for this administration, it actually passes as pretty sharp compared to everything else they've done.
Well, we do have the alleged status of forces agreement that may be signed there. Would that change, and the idea that we were building some type of special operations center to service that region?
Well, the problem is that there's not going to be any significant force involved in that, at least as it's projected now. And the cooperation that it so heavily depends upon from the Afghans themselves is going to be of little effectiveness. I mean, after all, the Afghan military has had an appalling record of having people who are being trained by American service personnel turn on those personnel and kill them. And this is obviously not every Afghan soldier who has been trained by an American, but there is a there is a huge record of what are called green-on-blue attacks that should have ended this whole misadventure long ago. But instead, it just continues. The only problem is that those green-on-blue attacks are going to continue as well. They are a symbol, an emblem of the fact that this is a group that you cannot be prevented from being infiltrated, cannot be prevented from being thoroughly penetrated by Taliban forces that will target Americans. And this makes any kind of large-scale cooperation extremely problematic because it just can't mount effective large-scale efforts with a group that cannot be wholly trusted.
Back to ISIS, do you think it's only a matter of time when our troops are going in there?
I tell you what, I don't know about that because Barack Obama is very much set against it, but I do know that if we don't do it, then they're just going to keep coming, that the Islamic State is an aggressive force that is dedicated to advancing, and they're going to keep expanding until they're stopped. It may be that the U.S. military is the only force capable of stopping them at this point.
And yet no call from Saudi Arabia or Jordan or anybody else.
Yeah, well, they're in a very difficult position because the Islamic State has wide approval in their countries, despite all the obfuscation in the mainstream media. The fact is this group is following the Quran, and they are very popular among many Muslims as a result. Not all, yes, but in Saudi Arabia, there was a poll that showed they have 92% support. And so if the Saudis, who don't like them and don't want them there, move against them too decisively, they could end up with an insurrection at home. And so they have to tread very carefully.
What's the overall lesson here, Mr. Spencer? I mean, I go back to, you know, as you said, the pre-Crusades here. We've messed with someone that doesn't have a problem that will continue to fight us no matter what. They won't stop, even if you did what we did to the Japanese. I don't think that these folks would stop.
No, you're quite right. They would never stop. These people are dyed-in-the-wool true believers, and they are acting upon what they believe in. They're never going to stop until they are stopped. And so we have to. The problem is we're in total denial about the nature and magnitude of this threat. There needs to be global strategizing about how to contain it and ultimately defeat it that meets the ideological challenge as well as the military one. But nobody's remotely close to doing that.
Finally, what about Putin? What does he think of all this?
Well, Putin knows, I think, far more than Barack Obama does what kind of a threat this group constitutes. And so it may be that Putin will ultimately act against them. He's facing Chechen jihadis that he has dealt with very forcefully. And so I would expect more decision, more decisiveness, more action from him than from Obama.
Well, it was amazing when we were, going to go in there and get Assad, it was Putin that said, you might not want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Because Putin knew that you take out Assad, then you're empowering groups like the Islamic State. And so he was always much more clear-eyed about this.
Mr. Spencer, we'd love to have you back. Thank you.
Call me anytime. Thank you.
All right, there we have it. Robert Spencer joining us. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Oh, Lord, Kevin. I don't know what I'd do without you in the mornings.
Kevin, stay fired up. We love you out there. We're glad you're there. We're glad you're doing a good job.
I just want to thank you because I appreciate it. You know, I don't always get the facts, so I like hearing it. So thanks.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
45 right now in Eagle, Idaho. Kevin Miller in the morning. Awaiting Steve Taylor of Fox News Radio. Talking about the big ISIS threat, and of course, more on the campaign trail in a minute. We go to Jason in Boise at 580 KIDO. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Kevin. You know, listening to the previous caller, if anybody is interested in some more, really, one-on-one dialogue with experts in Sharia law specifically, there's a panel coming up this weekend specifically dedicated to the expansion of Sharia law in the United States, being sponsored by the Republican Liberty Caucus of Idaho. I don't know if anybody is a little mystified about Sharia law. Frankly, it gets a lot better rap in the media, if you can believe that, than it should. And one of the things that some panelists at this expo have decided to do is really help unwrap some of the sugarcoating that the media has placed over Sharia law, and it's really frighteningly fast. Spread. And this isn't just Dearborn, Michigan stuff. This is going on all across the nation, actually.
Could we see it happen here?
No place is immune in the United States where citizens get comfortable and get lazy. If you have those two, recipes put together, then any state in any city in the United States is susceptible to the forward march, because they view it, of their agenda of a religiously based legal system that supersedes the civil legal system.
And Jason, if people want to go to this, what can they do?
Just go surf on over to IdahoLibertyCaucus.org. And this isn't just the only panel. Have you heard of PANDA?
I'm with you. We're kind of short on time here, so.
Yeah, People Against the NDAA. There's actually going to be a debate of gubernatorial candidates on Medicaid expansion.
Okay, Jason. Here's my hint. It's time to go.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Kevin, for your time. IdahoLibertyCaucus.org. You'll find all the details there and tickets as well. Thank you.
All right, there we have it. You see, there's the idea. You know, hey, we believe in you. You're great. Okay. You want to buy commercials to support the entity, 344-6363, we'd appreciate that. Steve Taylor knows all about the free dissemination of information. Good morning.
I also know about people running over time, so I'll keep that in mind. Good morning to you.
Good morning. No, that was just a caller there. I'm all about promoting events, but hey, Steve Taylor's on the phone. Well, you know, people are enthusiastic. Like the folks at ISIS, hopefully we'll have some enthusiasm to stop them.
Well, there's plenty of enthusiasm all around because these guys are stone killers. I can't confirm the report, but there's been some atrocity stories coming in that are just very hard to stomach, and I won't inflict them on your audience at breakfast time. But, yeah, there's enthusiasm for stopping them. In Germany, for the latest thing I've seen today, is German prosecutors have detained two more people following some raids this weekend on suspected supporters in Germany and taken them into custody. So they would appear to be on top of the legal situation in their own ground there. And we are dropping now, we being the coalition led by the United States, is dropping weapons for the use of the Kurds who are fighting the Islamic State extremists in along the Syrian border. Dropping them from the sky for them to gather up and go to work with. So that's the other development from late yesterday.
Steve Taylor with us, Fox News Radio, 580 KIDO. One thing that gets me, though, is the idea that now people are questioning whether or not these airstrikes have had any effect.
Always hard to tell, particularly when you haven't got anybody in town to go in and count up the bodies. But speaking of that, let's see. Somebody is reporting here. It's... But at least the bodies of at least 70 of the fighters for that group were dropped off over the last 4 days at a hospital in this in a town in Syria. So somebody is collecting corpses and bringing them in. You got to be suspicious, you know. In the fog of war, you never know exactly what's going on unless you are actually looking at it on the ground. So who the bodies are, don't know who brought them there, what kind of axe they may have to grind. All of these things should be kept in mind. But there are real, at least something's killed 70 people over there, and perhaps that makes it clear that the. To the extent that might be a matter of airstrikes, there you are. And in any case, the commanding general of U.S. forces in that region was talking the other day about the effects of taking out some of the oil production facilities, which is taking away money they have to use because they sell the oil. They've captured these oil production facilities, ISIS has, and then they're continuing to sell the oil just as if they were an oil company that owns it. And there is an effect. Another effect is that because of the airstrikes, they being the leaders of ISIS, are not gathering in groups where they could be hit by an airstrike, and they're not using the communication networks that they were using before, and they're not putting the troops in long convoys. Now, these are certainly all effects of the airstrikes.
You still wonder whether the drumbeats here in America will ever lead us to, you know, the president said, no more troops on the ground. Whether or not that will be broken just because of that they have to do it. I mean, we've got the ISIS outside of Baghdad now.
We do, and we're in control of a dam, which if it were somehow damaged or destroyed, would not only take out the water supply for much of the country, but could wash away parts of the whole river valley there, including Baghdad. So that would be something that might, you know, what will make change would be if something were to produce a swing in public opinion. And we've seen that happen at various times. But the leaders of the country and the leaders of any country that's a democracy will follow swings in public opinion if they can discern them. Sometimes they're trying to manipulate them, but that's another story and also always present. But troops on the ground, for that to happen, there would have to be something that makes this look a lot worse. And I don't rule that out. And I'm sure you don't either. It could certainly happen.
Steve Taylor, it's been too long, brother.
Pleasure to talk to you always. I wish the subject were a little more pleasant.
Maybe next time.
Okay, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir. There we have it. Our friend Steve Taylor joining us from Fox News Radio to Pro-Life at 580 KIDO.
Yeah, you know, I've been saying about for 20 or 30 years.
Good morning, Pro-Life. How are you?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Why, Kevin, thank you for asking. How are you, Kevin? I'm fine. Thank you for caring.
Well, hey, for about 20 or 30
Can I
years.
Tell you more about what's the panels at the Republican Liberty Caucus? Would you like to hear about that?
No. No,
okay.
I wouldn't.
So what's your agenda?
Well,
because apparently what we're talking about isn't compelling enough. So please, go ahead.
Well, I just want to make one comment. You know, you were talking about the marriage chapel up there in Coeur d'Alene.
Mm. The hitching post, yes.
Yeah. I've been saying for about 20 or 30 years that the churches need to get out of their 501c3 status, and none of them listen to me. I talk to a lot of pastors. I say that to every pastor I come in contact with. And here's the real, the churches are getting what they deserve because, you know, when you are a moral activist like I am, you don't see the churches out in the streets against the homosexuals when they have a parade or something. They should be out there telling them to repent, asking them to. And they should be pressuring the politicians to not have gay marriage. But they didn't do that, so now they're in a bind, and they kind of get what they deserve, and that it makes all of us in this situation. And, like, add the words. You know, when the state legislature doesn't take up add the words, then it doesn't allow people like ourselves to go in there and testify that homosexuality is against God's law, against natural law. So people have been wimpy, and so that's why we're here. That's all. That's about all I got to say.
Well, thank you, Pro-Life.
Well, God bless you.
God bless you.
I'll see you.
All right, there we have it, Pro-Life there. That was such an interesting segment, wasn't it? We started off with Jason about the jihads and then the Republican Liberty Caucus commercial. We go to Steve Taylor of Fox News. And then we have Pro-Life talking about whatever Pro-Life wants to talk about. See, it's all about the inmates running the asylum here. The only show in America where that happens. There's probably a reason for it. Time for traffic now.
Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
852, 580 KIDO. Can this day get any better? Liberal Steve, good morning. You're on 580 KIDO with Kevin Miller.
Buenos dias, Kevin Miller. Buenos dias to Idaho. Kevin, I'm looking for answers, you know, on this ISIS situation. I listened to your guests, Spencer and them, and they speak with the FBI and everything. But nobody's giving a clear, concise. You mentioned, well, eventually troops go in. None of these people like Spencer or anything want to come up like, well, just take Otter's 20-point list for schools. Nobody wants to come up with like a 20-point list how to rid these nations of ISIS. It continues. I mean, we pull out Taliban. I mean, we funded the Taliban.
Well, that would be Russia. Who's the commander in chief right now?
Well, yeah, the commander in chief.
Shouldn't he show some leadership? Oh, that's right. He called ISIS JV.
Well, how are you going to change
it? He was really on it, wasn't he?
Kevin, how is he going to change anything? How?
He was elected to do it. I'm not doing his job for him.
ISIS gets eliminated, somebody else steps up to the plate. They get eliminated, somebody else steps up to the plate. I mean, look, Iran was at war with Iraq for 10 years or maybe longer. I mean, when are we just going to stop this foolishness and pack up and move out?
And don't you understand that it's not about packing up and moving out? They want to destroy everything that is Christian, everything that is American. They're not going to let you off the hook. You either kill them or they're going to kill you.
Well, that hasn't worked to date, has it? It hasn't worked.
I think they're quite successful in taking over Iraq right now.
Yeah, nothing's worked. So let them have the government they want. Let them have the religion they want.
And let them launch terrorist attacks against America.
But if you just think of the trillions of dollars that could be put into homeland security and securing the borders and phone tapping and all this.
We've done a lot with that. That worked to stop the idiots in Boston, didn't it?
Well,
kind of like the CDC. Is it 21 days or 54 days? Oh, we really don't know.
Well,
should you be full body covered up or not? Well, take our word for it. We know what we're talking about this time. The truth is, to answer your question, Steve, is that the government is incompetent.
Well, who was incompetent before that government? And who was incompetent before that government? All the way back to 1776?
No, I will tell you this, that I would take George Bush right now over Mr. Obama. I'd take Bill Clinton right now over Mr. Obama.
Well, George Bush wouldn't be able
George
to,
Bush saved America.
George Bush is very busy, him and his
George
dad,
Bush saved America. You see, you're not answering the questions
right
here.
No, George Bush.
You don't like the answer
do?
To the question what? That your guy has dropped the ball,
what
that your guy
George
is incompetent, that nobody
what
wants to admit
you?
That they voted for him.
Tell me what George Bush solved.
See, we're not going to play. We're not going to play the liberal Steve game. This isn't about George Bush. This is about Barack Obama. Thank you for the call. 855 here at 580 KIDO. I mean, we sit here. Just as George Bush was held accountable, rightfully so, for the economy tanking, we take a look at where we are right now. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of people blaming George Bush for everything. You know, this guy has a Harvard education. He's smart. His wife is smart. Then solve these problems. We cannot debate that this is the worst foreign policy that we've seen in our lifetimes. This makes the Arab oil embargo look meek. The Cold War looked tame. We're fighting an enemy that has no respect for life, even more so than Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and anybody else. And they seek weakness, and they see it here. And what's our response to it? Well, we're going to drop bombs from 30,000 feet. If we're not willing to eradicate them, then they will come for us. That is the case right there. And to sit there and blame George Bush, I mean, it's just like this Ebola nonsense. You know, we have Deborah Wasserman Schultz blaming the Republicans. And yes, the computer doesn't work again. All right, at 580 KIDO, take my word for it, she does blame the Republicans for this. Now, is that something that is presidential? Is that something worthy of Congress? Is that something worthy of an adult where you're blaming a political party for Ebola.
What I'm saying as the chairwoman of this party is that this is an issue that should not be politicized.
Debbie, do you think there should be a travel ban?
This is an issue that should not be politicized. We need to make, there are two cases too many. We have a protocol that needed to be tightened, which has been tightened. We have a team of...
Should there be a travel ban?
The president should listen to national public health experts.
I say there should be.
Right.
It.
Nobody answers the question.
But you know how they define direct contact? Being within 3 feet of someone. We're talking about that it has to be within a cut or a fluid to get on you. This thing is incredibly contagious.
Dr. Rand Paul telling the truth. More in a minute. Time for traffic, 8:59. Kevin Miller in the morning. Well, thank you all for listening. Coming up, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Dave Ramsey, 46 right now, and Star. And like we said, look, people want good news. The good news is you have a job. The good news is, you know, there's hope. And whether it's the midterms or anything else, the big deal is, you know, we take a look at these state elections. Now is the time to hold your elected officials accountable. Do they represent you? Do they represent your values? And if it's more of the same, then it's time to vote for a change, correct? That's really what elections are about. And if the politicians aren't listening now, they never will. I'm always listening to you. Good day. God bless. Keep the faith. Serving Emmett.